Well, those of you now into the paranormal realm, we've got something for you. In a moment, Carla Willis Brandon joins us. We'll talk about contact from the afterlife right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'll tell you a little bit about Carla Willis Brandon, licensed marriage and family therapist, but author of several books discussing ranging topics from relationships, health, intimacy, self-esteem, addictions. But how about heavenly hugs? One last hug before I go and a glimpse of heaven. Hey, Carla, welcome back.
Hey, George, how are you?
I am fine. You've been away for about a year and a half from us, hiding, no doubt, huh?
Hiding on this island, avoiding hurricanes.
You got that right. What's been new? What have you been up to?
Well, basically, you know, I continue to collect the parting visions from the dying. And recently, I was in Italy. I went to a conference, actually, and it was all in Italian. And I don't speak a lick of Italian, but I heard some wonderful speakers.
in Italian. Bella, bella, things
yes,
like that.
And then I presented my information, and the funny thing is, one interpreter couldn't do it. I don't know if it was my thick California accent or my thick Texas accent. So they had to call somebody else up. And so we had a panel of myself and several interpreters trying to figure out what the heck I was saying. So it was, you know, it's been pretty wild this year. I was in Kiev before I was in Italy. And
were you there during the protests?
Oh, man, that was a really weird experience. All my relatives in Russia and Siberia and Germany, we all met just a couple hours outside of Kiev for a big family wedding. We actually, my one cousin bought a collective. You know, they used to have these big collectives after they took everybody's land away. And so that's where we all met. But before that, I spent some time in Kiev. And even though I don't understand Ukrainian or Russian, I could tell that something wasn't right. It felt really, really tense. Every time I got into a car with a taxi driver, my cousin would start going 90 miles an hour in Russian. And I knew they were talking about politics. And I knew it was tense. And it wasn't until I got home. Even at the airport, it was very, very tense. They were
Everywhere.
They were incredibly strict as far as, you know, just getting into the country and getting out there on the street. So, yeah, it was quite something when I got home. And shortly after that, I turned on the television and saw where I had been, full of protesters and.
You don't want to be in the middle of that, Carla.
No. I was really grateful to be home with my family on my goofy island waiting for hurricanes. So, yeah, it was pretty wild.
You know, in spite of how people feel about things here, there's nothing like the good old United States.
Well, I've traveled all throughout the former East Bloc, and I've traveled to, I mean, I was in Prague when the communists had pulled out, and when the Berlin Wall came down, my husband and I were there. And so, you know, we've done a lot of traveling, and we have relatives in Israel, and we've talked to them as the bombs were whistling overhead. And when I hear people complain about the United States, and yes, we've got our problems, I want to take them and shake them and say, you know, let me tell you what it's really like. Have you been to Auschwitz? You know, I have an aunt who survived Auschwitz, and so about 10 years ago, the family took her back so that she could tell us the story about her survival. So, you know, I mean, my husband is convinced we were going to go back to the East Bloc this summer and do some traveling around and take the boys to Auschwitz. And we made a decision that maybe we'll do something a little closer to home.
Well, that's good. Now, you're still, of course, investigating the dearly departed.
Yes, I am. And, you know, the thing that's so interesting is that no matter where I go, I know I talked about this last time, no matter where I go, whether it's a cocktail party or the movies with friends or somebody eventually comes and asks me about the afterlife, and they usually do so very quietly.
They don't want to hear other people, do they?
Huh?
They don't want to hear other people talking to you about it, do they?
Well, you know, in your studies and research, that people, we still live in a very phobic society when it comes to death and dying. And to be honest with you, I tend to forget, and then I shoot my mouth off and I say something. I have Crohn's disease, and so I had to make a little trip to the hospital. I'm fine, don't worry, health is a horse. But I ended up in the room where my father-in-law was just before he passed, believe it or not. In a huge, you know, here's this huge hospital, and here I am in the room where
my
father-in-law was.
Synchronicity, not a coincidence.
Not at all. And I felt very comforted by that. And I said something to one of the nurses, and she gave me what for, up one side, down the other, and hell in a handbasket. And so I zipped it pretty quick. So I tried sharing this a couple of more times with a few other nurses. I wasn't going to touch the doctors. But I still got some pretty strange responses. People really are very uncomfortable talking about this. I almost feel that when I first started doing these investigations, there was a little bit more openness. So I don't know what's going on. I think sometimes in the world, when there is a lot of fear, and there are a lot of things going on in the world right now, fear outside of us, outside of our family situation, outside of our town, state, country, what that will do is that will almost put us on a unconscious state of high alert. And so people really don't want to get into talking about death and dying. They're more focused in on what's going on and will we survive and keeping things in tow and not blowing it out of proportion. So these are interesting times, George.
Oh, they sure are. Are you glad? Is this the time you're glad we're here? Would you prefer to be living during another time period?
I find this very, very interesting. I've ventured out and had some past life experiences, and they were very powerful for me. And I know that there are other people in your listening audience who have had these experiences also. But the change that's going on, I mean, people discovering their own sense of freedom all around the world where they were so oppressed. I know that you have relatives who immigrated here, and my relatives, my great-grandparents, they immigrated here from Russia to avoid conflict and strife, and this was the new world. And so to actually to go to other countries, especially countries that have been so oppressed, and to see this change take place, and to watch as my one cousin who lives in Siberia talk about their politics, even though I didn't understand a whole lot of it, it's fascinating. I find it absolutely fascinating, and I think sometimes in our country we get too lost in things like celebrity and things of that nature to really peek outside our safety zone and go, wow, these people, this is happening in their lifetime. My cousin, when the Soviet Union fell apart, a lot of my family was lost in Kazakhstan. We didn't even know that line existed. And I know you're very big into tracing family history.
Oh, sure. Love it.
And thankfully, I found this line. I mean, I went and I did what my grandparents. I know that they're on the other side and they're clapping because I was able to go find this line of the family, but I found them living in such incredibly different circumstances than how I was raised. They immigrated to, a lot of them immigrated to what was Eastern Germany. And some, as I said, are still in Russia and Siberia. And now I have some in the Ukraine. And just the mentality and the gratitude and the sense of the need to be involved in politics, and it reminds me of my youth and my younger days when so many of us were so passionate about these things. And I think to an extent some of that is lost on some of the population.
Yeah, Carla, you know, when you've discussed the departing visions or deathbed visions, how often does this happen?
Well, for me, I hear about it all the time, but based on what I have heard over the years, and it's been quite a long time, it's going on 30 years now, I hear consistently the same sort of accounts. And so I think they happen more often than not. I know that there are some researchers out there who do have financial backing who are able to begin definitely researching just how often these accounts are reported. I mean, there's even a VA in California that's researching. There's a woman, you may have had her on your show, who was working with Peter Fenwick, who I know you're also very familiar with, who also has been looking. He was very into near-death experiences, and then he took a trip to the dark side, my side, and he started really investigating departing visions. And I know he's done some research, not only in the UK, but in Holland. But there are more and more individuals in Italy, and it's just, it's not the way it was when I first started out. When I first started out, there was Dr. Osis and Dr. Haraldson, their study, and maybe one or two more. And even Erlinger and Haraldson has gone back and taken a look at some more of the departing vision phenomenon. So it seems to be the numbers vary from researcher to researcher, but I would say that probably about at least 50% of us, either when we're getting ready to pass or if we're sitting at the bedside, we will encounter a departing vision.
Is it easier or harder nowadays to be tuned into this? I would think it's gotten better.
Well, we still have, you know, some of that stuff that goes on where, even within the hospice movement, where there isn't a whole lot of education, but then there are others who are very up to speed. And so if a family member is sitting by the bedside, there was this great article that actually came out in a newspaper in Pennsylvania where a husband and wife were in separate hospitals, and one passed before the other and was there to greet the remaining spouse as that spouse began to move on themselves. And there were medical people around, and the family members, they were all brought up to speed about, you know, what this was. And so I do hear, what I'm hearing is this, George. If a physician doesn't really know much about the departing vision, what they will say is, you know, I have heard about these things. Let me see if I can get you some information, even if they're a non-believer. I've also the nurses are getting more information about the departing vision.
Oh, I bet it's huge at a hospital.
Yes, it is huge. And you know what? Nurses are the main caretakers. They really are. They're the ones who provide the comfort to the family. And I'm not knocking physicians. I've had some great ones. But the nurses are the ones who are in the trenches and they're in the front lines. And so they're the ones who usually are there to explain what this is. They've had more experience with the departing vision. So you have some family member who maybe they belong to some religion that says, no, 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 we don't ever dabble in demons and those sorts of things. And let's say that that family member watches their loved one start to talk to relatives and friends who have passed over to the other side. And the conversation is, it's like you and me having a conversation. It's very natural, but for the family member who is unaware of this, and your listeners are most likely aware of these experiences because they listen to guests come on your show. I'm not the only one, and they discuss these things. But there are tons of people out there in the general public who they don't have access, or they just it's not where they're at, and their first experience is with a loved one who's getting ready to pass, and the loved one starts talking about, oh, I see my brother or my grandfather or mother, or they start having conversations. Some people who are having these departing visions are very ready to go, and they're excited. There are others who may have been scared to death of death, and then suddenly they calm down and they're very excited. Then there are those who are kind of leery. They're not real sure, like my mother-in-law. She was basically pretty much an atheist, and she started seeing my father-in-law and calling him out in Yiddish, and she told him she wasn't going to go with him. And we were saying, go, it's okay, go with Pop. And then she finally acquiesced once her mother showed up, and she was definitely very comfortable, and she moved on. But those nurses are the ones who can sit and say, you know, honey, it's okay for you to talk. Go ahead and talk to talk to the person whose hand you're holding, who is getting ready to pass over, and ask them who it is they are talking to. And then ask them some more questions. You know, once they share some things with you, ask them some more questions. It's nothing to be afraid of. And some of these nurses will use their other experiences that they have encountered in practicing in their nursing. They will use those experiences to normalize what's going on for these folks who are seeing this for the first time. So in those realms, if you want to call them that, in those realms, I am seeing more and more nurses being more willing to step up and say, oh, I don't care who gives me a hard time. I'm going to spill the beans anyway.
That's dramatic.
That's a really good thing.
So when we see our loved ones and we're reunited, what's that link that creates that? Is there some tie-in? Is it the love between us? What is it?
Well, I'm going to tell you a story. I know that I told you this story last time.
Yeah, but that was a year and a half ago, so some people have forgotten.
There's more news. It's good news. There's more news here. When my mother got ready to pass, she was in a hospital across town, and I was at home. And I was 16 years old. I had just turned 16. And I felt her leave. And once I felt that, I felt very serene and very comforted. And it was about 5 in the morning, and I got up, and I went downstairs, and I waited for somebody to call from the hospital, and they did. And they told me that she had passed on. Well, at that same time, two friends of my mother's and a very delightful friend of mine named Richard, and the other one was Ann, and Ann was a nurse. They too were awakened in different locations, and they too knew that my mother had passed on. Well, you know, Facebook is a wonderful thing. And that's, you know, I've connected with some of my cousins over the last few years, and so I had posted that story online, and all of a sudden, one of my cousins who I had reacquainted myself with, she quickly messaged me, and she said, oh my goodness, she said, I woke up at the same time, at the exact moment of your mother's passing, and so did your great aunt, my mother. So there were 5 of us who woke up. Now, what was it that glued us all together? We all loved my mother. We were all very, very close to my mother. And interestingly, within this group of 5, we had all been there for each other in a very deep and significant way at one time or another. And so I really and truly believe that, you know, it is like so many other people have said before me, I'm not in, you know, reinventing the wheel here, but it really comes down to love, that interconnectedness that we really do have for, that we have between us. I always like to say that if I don't take care of my history and my demons and my difficulties, I'm not going to be able to connect with you in a healthy way. I won't. I'll be too trapped inside my own brain. I won't be able to experience that, what it feels like, that intense sensation of love. I had it once when I had just done some work with a severe sexual abuse survivor, and the trauma was so devastating that on my way home, you know, we shrinks, we therapists, we cry too when we assist those of you who have difficulties in your life. And this was one of those situations. And I was coming over the causeway, coming back to Galveston, and I asked my concept of a higher power or guides. I said, why me? Why me? Why am I the catalyst? Why am I the one that is the conduit for this sort of healing? And all of a sudden I saw this web. It was the web started within
Well, you were the chosen one. We'll be back to finish the story in a moment. And of course, Carla Willis Brandon with us. We're talking about her work, Contact from the Afterlife. Fascinating. Next hour, we'll take your phone call. Share your stories with us, too. This is a subject that just I completely find fascinating. We're going to be back with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. But with all these disasters out there, boy, this Mother Nature just doesn't stop, does it? Or she just doesn't stop. Could your family survive a week or a month without food or water? Probably not. So take advantage of foodinsurance.com, America's trusted source for the emergency food reserves, to ensure that you, your family, the people you care about are taken care of during an emergency. Food insurance products provide peace of mind, allowing the family to enjoy delicious meals and the safety and peace of mind. Order now, receive a large backpack to store your food and emergency items. That happens to be, by the way, a $59 value, absolutely free, when you click on the Coast to Coast image. That's the Coast to Coast image at foodinsurance.com. This is a great company that has been set up to help you get through an emergency. Foodinsurance.com, but make sure you click the Coast to Coast image at foodinsurance.com. Welcome back. Carla Willis Brandon with us. Of course, Carla, you are a believer now in life after death. But how do you explain it? What is it?
Well, it's a continuation. I mean, what I was saying earlier is that we're all interconnected. I don't think this is new news. I just think we forgot the message over the last couple of hundred years.
Yeah, really.
But we really are all connected. And so when we shed this material body that we're in and we're here to learn something, I was dealt a deck of cards. I mean, I'm a recovering alcoholic with 30 years of sobriety. I grew up in a crazy family like a lot of us, and my job was to either give in to it or grow from it. And so I have chosen to grow with a number of different communities so that I can continue to understand that this is a we deal and not a me deal. So I think that when we go to the other side, the journey continues. What I have heard from people who have shared with me and what I have experienced is that, you know, so many individuals, they believe that once they go to the other side, if they have a belief in the afterlife, there's this belief that, okay, it's a done deal. I'm wiping my hands clean of everything. And no, that's so wrong. We take with us ourselves to the other side. We just may have surroundings that are a little bit different. And what I've seen in collecting and talking to people who have had these experiences is that on the other side, even the environment is similar from culture to culture. The decorations might be a little bit different, and those who greet us might be a little bit different, but basically it's pretty much the same experience. And so, you know, what do I think the afterlife is? It's like moving from Texas to California or from California to New York. It's a whole new experience. But for those left in this dimension, the challenge is, okay, now communication becomes a bit more difficult. So how are we going to keep that connection going? And so what I like to do with people who are in grief, because I use these experiences along with the near-death experience and after-death communication, and there are other therapists who do this also, thankfully, is I like to present to the people I'm working with who are in such serious grief and they don't have any place to turn and they don't have any sort of religion or philosophy to lean back on. What I like to do is I like to pull out not only my accounts, but the accounts of other researchers in different, you know, different parts of the world and say, take a look at this. All of us can't be wrong. And you'll begin to see a little bit of hope in their eyes. Now, they still have to do the grief work because, as I said, change, anytime we experience change in a relationship, we've got to grieve that change. But there is this sense that a lot of people we have worked with, my husband and I over the years, they began their journey with the passing of a loved one. Loss of children, which is very heartbreaking. Some of these parents, if they can survive that, they reach a place in their recovery from that loss where they feel more connected to each other. They find a community for themselves, and then they find a way to connect with that child who has passed on also.
It's not easy, though, is it?
No, it is not. I can tell you that 50% at least of parents who lose a child if they can't do this very, very difficult work, which isn't really well supported by society or our major institutions, they will end up in divorce. If they can trudge forward and pick up the tools and take a look at, because the solution is out there. It really is. You have individuals who are mediums. You have the spiritualist church. You have other religious movements that embrace the philosophy of a healthy sort of afterlife where the journey continues. If they're willing to seek these avenues out and connect with others who have trudged before them, they can make it. Anybody can. But like I said, it's not easy. But these experiences can make it easier. And so, of course, there are exercises for them to do and things for them to look out for. And I'm hearing a lot about white feathers lately. A friend of mine, yeah, her son was murdered, and it was horrible. It was just absolutely terrible for her. And she started finding white feathers. I mean, she filled up a bowl with white feathers. Huh. My husband is a big penny collector. So, you know, it really is just about having an open mind and being willing to explore and trudge through the pain and get to the other side and then continue the journey.
Let me ask you about this light that everybody says they see at the end of the tunnel, whether they come back or whether they just keep going. What is that white light?
Well, I am not very good at physics, but I like reading Thomas Campbell, who I think is brilliant, and some of these other physicists who can talk in terms of some of the things that people who have near-death experiences or after-death communications or where they have these experiences of seeing that white light. You can also have individuals who are with a dying loved one, and they can actually travel with that loved one to the white light, and they reach a point in that tunnel where they can't go any further, and their loved one crosses over, and then they have to come back. And then what they can also experience are the after-death communications, where they can receive communications from their deceased loved ones, physically deceased.
If you go into the light, Carla, are you dead?
If you go into the light, I think if you approach the light, you're getting close. If you go into the light and it's not your time, I suspect one of your guides is going to say, you have a choice, you can come or you can go. And then you're going to have those individuals whose guides say, andale, you have some more to learn. And those are the three scenarios that I hear time and again, over and over again. So I think that there are so many people who have seen the white light that it's almost become part of satire. That has become ingrained in our culture, near-death experiences, going towards the light, seeing the white light. You have individuals who meditate, and they can approach the white light. Some of them can travel into the white light. You have people who can leave their bodies, and they can only get so far. You know, Robert Monroe, who was one of the greatest of out-of-body travelers and who founded the Monroe Institute, he after a while, became very bored with his out-of-body experiences, and I think probably he couldn't get any farther. He could only go so far. It wasn't his time. So, you know, the white light is that crossover into the next dimension. And in that next dimension, I think that we gravitate towards like-minded people. I think that some people, when they cross over, they're wounded and they need some assistance from individuals on the other side, groups on the other side, soul groups on the other side that can assist them in healing and so that they can move on to the next part of the journey. But I think there is so much to learn about this that my job really is, aside from my own experiences, is to just listen, to everything.
When you're studying all this, have you ever personally come across anything demonic? Because so far, everything sounds like it's pretty good.
Well, so some people do have a challenge. We've seen that with Eben Alexander when he had his near-death experience, and he was in the mush and in the gray brownish sludge. And other individuals have experienced that also. You find that also with some individuals who have departing visions. What they will see is they will have uncomfortable visitations. And I will tell you, these are far and few between. It's not like I've received a bucket load of these, but I have received some. And so, but the interesting thing, as Barbara Romer, the physician who passed away some time ago, who studied some of these hellish near-death experiences, said, there was always a learning experience. Even if they were hellish or difficult or frightening, at the end, there was something positive to learn. So individuals who continue to study those, quote, hellish near-death experiences have reported the same thing. Now, the demonic, some people have shared with me black shadows, individuals in black. I'm not real sure about that. I have collected them. They are very similar to one another. They have frightened the individuals who have had them. Some people have found a positive message in those experiences, and others were just really, really scared. But like I said, it's a minute number. So most of the ones that I experience with those that I work with or have researched is, like my mother-in-law, she's the perfect example. She was a hardcore atheist, and she had lost her family in the Holocaust, and she was very, very angry at religious institutions.
Sure, she didn't want to believe.
Absolutely, and I think that most atheists have at the core of their anger towards religion, and please, I'm sure I'll get a bunch of email over this, but I haven't met an atheist yet who didn't have some unresolved grief issue that they hadn't come to terms with. And they were very, very angry with the Santa Claus concept of God and some of the, antiseptic, I even hate saying this, but some of the religions that were kind of cut and dry, and there wasn't a lot of wiggle room for questioning. So what they do is they get very focused in on that, and they don't look at the rest of us who are also skeptics. You know, we go into our work and our own experiences with a skeptical mind, but what we do is we keep an open mind. And when the evidence starts to pile up and we're seeing the same thing over and over and over and over again, and it's not the consequence of a dying brain, as is the case with the departing vision, that's been researched to death, or opiates given for pain or pain management medication, because the person who receives pain management medication can have the same type of departing vision as the person who doesn't. And looking at this evidence, the evidence can become, it's overwhelming. And I think a lot of these atheists, they don't research. My experience has been that they don't really look at the research. They don't look at the continuation of experience. And so they're real invested in hanging on to their belief system, which actually is a religion.
Well, it is a religion. There's no doubt about that. But to the best of your ability, these demonic forces that are out there, what are they trying to do?
Well, I live on an island that was hit by a huge storm in 1900, and 9,000 people died.
Oh my.
And around here, we're used to that sort of stuff. And so you're going to have, just because I'm not going to get struck wonderful just because I cross over to the other side if I haven't cleaned up my mess on this side. So for individuals who have a lot of unfinished business on this side, they have the choice when they cross over to go for the assistance that is offered and to heal themselves with the help of others and become a part of a community and do the work necessary. But then there are those that just want to hang on, you know? There are those that want to hang on to their addictions. They want to hang on to their resentments. They want to, they just want to hang on. And so we had an office house years ago that was in a 100-year-old house, and Oh my gosh, we had this one spirit that would manifest in front of my patients. It was kind of a problem. Yeah, and this was a pretty angry individual. And so basically what we said was, you can stay, we'd be more than happy to have you stay, but you can't disrupt our business. And so it was important to challenge that individual, who obviously was very unhappy and very had a lot of unfinished business, just as I would if somebody walked into my office full of resentment and needed some assistance.
Did it go away?
It was quieter. It wasn't quite.
So it listened.
It wasn't quite as disruptive. Yes. And we've had that. We have a house in North Carolina, and it's, oh, who knows how old that place is. And we had a few problems there, and the same words were said, and we have minimal difficulty. And it's discussed in my circles, even on this island, because of the storm and because there was so lost, there is a lot of spirit activity here. And so it's discussed. It's openly discussed. If I'm going to be afraid of a bully, if somebody approaches me and they're a bully, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to take care of myself and I'm going to set some boundaries.
Good for you.
And I think the same thing.
Well, I don't want to tussle with you. No bullies will get to you.
No, but I think the same attitude needs to be taken for these afterlife individuals or trapped spirit entities who decide that they're going to make everybody else's life miserable because they're miserable, or they're full of grief and they don't know how to, you know, they don't know how to move on. So
what are
interconnectedness?
What are these dreamtime premonitions that you've talked about?
Well, with the last book, I really, really dug into some of this stuff because I had, right after 9/11, I had a premonition about the airliner that crashed into Queens. I mean, I saw everything. I saw the planes. I saw the people. I saw the flames. I saw the buildings. I saw absolutely everything. And I woke up, and a short time after that, I turned on the television, and there was my dream. And so I decided I really wanted to take a look at that. And also, living in the NASA area and having worked flight medicine a gazillion years ago with some of the space shuttle stuff, there was, when Challenger blew up, there were people who had these experiences, as with 9/11. And so I happened to just put this out there, and lo and behold, this really wonderful guy from Canada contacted me. He and I had the exact same dream premonition about the airliner that crashed in Queens. And so what I started doing is I started asking questions and digging around, and I started to notice that you don't have to be a full-blown psychic to experience these things. So we have the group phenomenon, which I know a lot of your listeners are aware of.
Yes,
where,
that's big. That's big.
Yeah, all of a sudden people will either, it can range from suddenly just feeling uneasy and uncomfortable, or having dreams about events that just having dreams, and then they come to fruition. So this can also happen. It's been going on for eons with premonitions regarding a passing. And in some families, what I have found is that this is just taken for granted. You know, like Aunt June always has the premonitions. I got a wonderful email from a Jewish man who was probably in his mid-70s, and he announced to me that he was the one who always had the premonitions in his family.
Huh.
And he had actually found a post regarding some of my research on his synagogue bulletin board. And so he got in touch with me. But those are not uncommon. I think that, you know, when there are different types of dreams. There are dreams that are related to stress, and dreams help us process out our stress. Even if we don't think we've been dreaming at night, we think we're a blank slate. Yes, we have dreamed. And it is. It's healthy for us to dream.
Very powerful in our dreams. We'll talk more about that, Carla, when we come back, and then we'll take phone calls and stories with you as we talk about contact from the afterlife.